From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because life and truth matter. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast, we present another episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast, in which Hank talked with Professor of Apologetics Nancy Piercy, author of Love Thy Body, answering hard questions about life and sexuality. Let's now join Hank as he introduces Nancy Piercy.
And welcome to another edition of Hank Unplugged. This is our podcast. It is a means by which I can bring to you some of the most interesting, informative, and inspirational people on the planet. And I'm delighted to do that very thing today, as we have a discussion with Nancy Piercy, who serves as a professor of apologetics and is a scholar in residence at Houston Baptist University. She is also a fellow at the Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture, an author of award-winning books. Some of my favorites include Total Truth and the newest book, Love Thy Body. Nancy, interesting enough, is formerly an agnostic, but now roundly regarded as America's preeminent evangelical Protestant female intellectual. And Nancy, it is an absolute delight to have this conversation with you today.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
I thoroughly enjoyed Total Truth and enjoyed reading through Love Thy Body as well. I think it's an incredible book, and we are going to use it as an offer for the month so that people who support the ministry can get this book. And as someone has well said, this is a book that not only needs to be read, but mastered. It is a book that allows us to see just how far our culture has devolved and what we can do about it. I often say, Nancy, that paradigms allow us to see only what our paradigms allow us to see. We don't think so much about our paradigms as we think with our paradigms. And as Christians, we have unwittingly adopted bad paradigms. It's not just the culture, therefore, that needs to be liberated. It seems to me it's Christianity that needs to be liberated from its own cultural captivity.
Well, that's right. When we talk about these issues that I address in Love Thy Body, we're looking at moral issues like abortion, assisted suicide, homosexuality, transgenderism. And in the book, I am very concerned to help people understand the secular paradigms, because so many Christians are also adopting, absorbing those paradigms without even knowing it. And in particular, I talk about the view of the body, as you might guess from the title. And I show that the secular view of the body is a very low view, that has a low view of the dignity, value, and purpose of the body, and that Christians have absorbed that as well, and that it's not biblical. And so the response I'm getting from a lot of readers is, I picked up this book because I thought I'd get some handy arguments against the secular view, and instead it's transforming me and my understanding of the body and how it relates to these moral issues. So you're right, it really hits both sides. It helps people be equipped to understand our secular culture and respond more effectively. But to do that requires also a transformation of our own thinking.
Yeah, and maybe you can expand on that a little bit, because I think it's critical for Christians to learn to think Christianly and to develop a Christian worldview. Oftentimes, we embrace other worldviews without recognizing that we have embraced the very water in which we swim, the culture in which we live.
Yeah, let's take maybe the most hot-button issue for Christians, homosexuality. Even conservative churches are dividing over this issue, and young people are having a hard time seeing what's wrong with it. And what I help people to see is that homosexuality assumes a very low view of the body. People say we should accept homosexuals because we want to be loving. If you want to be loving, you want to help them to see that the view itself is very dehumanizing and very negative. For example, here's how I would unpack that. No one really denies that biologically, physiologically, anatomically, males and females are counterparts to one another. That's just how this human sexual and reproductive system is designed. So what happens when you embrace a same-sex identity then? Well, implicitly, you're contradicting that design. Implicitly, you're saying, well, why should the structure of my body inform my identity? Why should my sexed body have any say in my moral choices? Well, that's a profoundly disrespectful view of the body. And the implication is what counts is not whether I'm biologically male or female, but just my feelings, my desires, my mind, my, you know, the non-physical part of me. So as a result, it has a very fragmenting impact on the human personality. It's self-alienating. It's alienating people from their own body. So those who defend a biblical view of sexuality are not relying on a few scattered Bible verses. What we're promoting is a teleological worldview. Teleology means it has a purpose. So we are saying that the structure of your body has a purpose and that it reflects a divine purpose. As a result, it encourages people to live in harmony with their biological sex and leads to a holistic integration of personality. So this gives us a chance to present the biblical ethic not simply in negative terms, you know, it's a sin, don't do it, thou shalt not, which is true, but it's not complete. It gives us a chance to communicate it in a positive way. We have a higher view of the body. We have a high view of the dignity and value of the body. And we are encouraging people to have a much more positive view of their body instead of the negative one implied by the homosexual narrative.
You know what I find interesting about what you just said is that in reality, there are so many people in the secular culture who presuppose that Christianity itself has a low view of the body.
Yes, in fact, I'm getting that pushback from some of my critics, and they say, wait a minute, it's Christianity that has a low view of the body and that focuses on, you know, the next world. Problem is that many Christians are out of touch with their own heritage. If you look back to when Christianity started, the early church was surrounded by world-denying philosophies like Platonism and Gnosticism. They treated the material world as a place of death, decay, and destruction. In fact, in Gnosticism, which taught that there were many levels of deity, the world was created by a very low-level deity, even an evil deity, because after all, no self-respecting God would get his hands dirty mucking about with matter. So in this context, Christianity was revolutionary. It taught that, no, it was the highest God, the supreme deity, who created this material world. And what's more, he pronounced it very good. And an even greater scandal was the incarnation, the very idea that God himself would enter the material world and take on a human body. That was totally rejected by Gnosticism. The incarnation is the ultimate affirmation of the dignity of the human body. And finally, at the end of time, is God going to scrap the material world as if he made a mistake the first time? No. The Bible teaches that he's going to renew and restore this world. He's going to create a new heavens and a new earth, which is why the Apostles' Creed affirms the resurrection of the body. This is an astonishingly high view of the physical world. There's nothing else like it in any other philosophy or religion. And so Love Thy Body, my book, gives people the tools to go beyond a negative message and to deploy positive arguments showing that a biblical ethic is actually more appealing, more attractive, and more compelling than any secular ethic.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely fascinating when you think about what you just discussed with respect to the incarnation and the resurrection, the ascension of Jesus Christ. The Christian worldview is not Platonic. It is physical. If we would have been in the tomb when Christ rose from the dead, we would have seen dust fly off the very slab upon which he lay. So physicality is significant. And I think that relates in a real sense to what the title of your book underscores. We ought to love our body because Christ loved the body. Christ cherished the body, and we are going to be resurrected immortal, imperishable, incorruptible, but in real physical bodies, in a real physical universe.
And it also gives it tools for some of the other moral issues as well. The most obvious one is transgenderism. It's very easy there to detect the low view of the body. In arguments supporting transgenderism, the argument is that your body can be at war with your mind, that biological sex has nothing to do with your gender, that the authentic self is strictly a matter of inner feelings. So kids down to kindergarten are being taught that their bodies are irrelevant to who they are. And the implication is that the body doesn't matter, that matter does not matter. All that matters is your inner feelings. If you sense some kind of disjunction between your mind and your body, the mind wins. But why? Why should we accept such a demeaning view of the body? It's radically dehumanizing. If our bodies do not have inherent value, then that's a key part of our human identity that's being devalued. So the transgender narrative estranges people from their own body, and Christians have a wonderful opportunity here to step in and say, we have a high view of the body. We want to see what we are encouraging is integration, is a psychosexual, psychophysical identity, is a unity, and that we want to help people recover a harmony between their biological sex and their psychological experience. Again, how can we present this as anything but a very positive, very loving view?
You say that on the one hand, but the moment you, as you just mentioned, you step in and you communicate these kinds of things, the immediate pushback is that you are bigoted, you are small-minded, and as a result of bringing up subjects like this or even tackling these subjects, you're frequently being marginalized in the culture. So how do we do it? How do we communicate with gentleness and with respect and reach out to people who are reaping a holocaust in their own lives?
Exactly. Well, let's just take another example. Abortion is still a battlefield in spite of the gains that we have made. And again, what we're saying is that we have a high view of human life. Think of how bioethicists now defend abortion. They used to say that the fetus is not fully human. And in among ordinary people, you sometimes hear that still. But among professional bioethicists, that's not the argument anymore. Bioethicists defend abortion by saying, yes, the fetus is biologically human because due to genetics, DNA, there's just no argument about it anymore. So how do they justify killing a being that's a human? Well, they say it's human, but it's not a person. A person is someone with some kind of higher level cognitive functioning. As long as it's just a human, that means it can be killed for any reason or no reason. It can be used for research. It can be tinkered with genetically. It can be harvested for organs. The little body parts can be sold, and then it can be thrown away with the other medical waste. What does that mean? It means that the sheer fact of being biologically human is no longer a basis for human rights, especially the most basic human right, which is not to be killed. This is a drastic devaluation of human life. And so we need to help people realize, again, we're often cast as being bigots or against women's rights or against women having the freedom to be active in culture. No, we are saying if you don't protect people because they're human, then you have no protections for any. All your other rights are lost. You can't experience and enjoy any other rights if you don't have the right not to be killed. So again, our argument is always positive, that we have a higher view of human life. We want to affirm people's human rights, and it's the secular view that is actually dehumanizing, negative, and it's destroying the basis for human rights.
Yeah, there's no question about it. You know, you're obviously a big Francis Schaeffer fan, and I remember many years ago when Francis Schaeffer was making such a big impact on our culture, he was warning people that abortion would be the watershed issue of our era. He said something to the effect that of all the subjects relating to the sanctity of life, abortion was the preeminent. It was the first and the crucial issue that had an overwhelming impact in changing attitudes towards the value of life in general. Talk about how significant this issue is, particularly in light of the fact that now people are selling body parts. You have an abortion, then you reassemble the parts, and those parts are worth money. So there's an industry that is afoot today, and yet somehow or other it is tolerated.
Well, it also shows that it's Christians now who are on the side of science. In other words, being human, if the fetus is just a piece of matter, and, you know, it's a product of biological evolution, And we have evolved out of the slime by blind material forces. So really, the human body is just a piece of matter like any other chance configuration of matter. And then you say that at some point, that piece of matter turns into a person. And once it's a person, it has inviolable rights and cannot be killed, and it becomes a crime to kill it. What kind of transformation is that? If you ask scientifically, can you detect any sort of transformative point where the, you know, a mere human becomes a person? There's no point that can be detected objectively and empirically and scientifically. So as a result, the definition of personhood is private, non-scientific, non-empirical, subjective, and arbitrary. So it's amazing here how the tables have turned. In the past, Christians were charged as being the ones who were against science, who were imposing their religious views. And now it's very clear that the concept of personhood is, in fact, a postmodern, subjective, non-scientific concept. And it's pro-life people who are saying, wait a minute, we need scientific evidence. We need to base our morality on the scientific evidence of when life begins.
Don't go away. In just a few moments, we'll rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Professor Nancy Piercy. Trans activists detach gender from biological sex. Kids down to kindergarten are being taught their bodies are irrelevant. Is this affirming, or does it demean the body? Find out in Nancy Piercy's new book, Love Thy Body, answering hard questions about life and sexuality. To receive your hardcover copy of Love Thy Body as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's many outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Take the Bible Answer Man broadcast wherever you go on your phone or handheld device with the Equip app, free from the Christian Research Institute. The Equip app is available for both Apple and Android devices, so you can listen to the Bible Answer Man broadcast live each day or listen to archived programs at your convenience. You can also subscribe to the Christian Research Journal, make a donation to CRI, and read well-researched, trustworthy articles that will help you defend the faith and grow in your walk with Christ. With the Equip app from the Christian Research Institute, you'll have the answers you need to questions about Christianity, cults, and issues of theological and apologetic concern right at your fingertips wherever you go. So go to equip.org/app and download the Equip app for your phone or tablet today. Again, that's equip.org/app. Of Nancy Piercy's recent book, Love Thy Body, answering hard questions about life and sexuality, Professor Robert P. George of Princeton University says, liberal secularist ideology rests on a mistake, and Nancy Piercy puts her finger right on it. In embracing abortion, euthanasia, homosexual conduct and relationships, transgenderism and the like, liberal secularism is philosophically as well as theologically untenable. Piercy is precisely clear about what makes humans valuable. Don't just read, master Love Thy Body. To receive your hardcover copy as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI. And make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-transforming outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org.
The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Here's what's in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. First a prominent voice for the Nation of Islam, and then for a violent alternative to Martin Luther King Jr.'s civil rights approach, Malcolm X is arguably one of the most important African-American thinkers. His ethic of violence is more compatible with Christian ethics than many would think, but the two nonetheless diverge at a crucial point. Other topics include the apologetic value of coincidences in New Testament reporting, new atheist evangelism, spirituality in modern hip-hop, and much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today at a special limited time discount rate by calling 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or subscribe online at equip.org.
Welcome back to the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. On today's special edition, we're presenting an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast in which Hank talked with Professor of Apologetics Nancy Piercy. Advocates for same-sex sexuality disconnect sexuality from biological identity. Is this liberating or does it denigrate biology? Discover the truth in Nancy Piercy's new book, Love Thy Body, answering hard questions about life and sexuality. To receive your copy of Love Thy Body as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-transforming outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Well, let's rejoin Hank and Professor Piercy in their conversation.
In the past, Christians were charged as being the ones who were against science, who were imposing their religious views. And now it's very clear that the concept of personhood is, in fact, a postmodern, subjective, non-scientific concept. And it's pro-life people who are saying, wait a minute, we need scientific evidence. We need to base our morality on the scientific evidence of when life begins. After all, nobody argues about the moral worth of life until science has first established that life exists. So the pro-life arguments are the ones that start with science. And these days, it's the pro-choice, the pro-abortion arguments that are based on a subjective set of personal views and values. This is another one of those areas where Christians need to turn the tables and show that our view is scientific. And not only does it value the human person, but it's based on objective facts.
When I hear you talk, and I want to take a little detour here and talk about you personally, because when I hear you talk, I hear Francis Schaeffer. And I know Francis Schaeffer had a tremendous impact on your life. I think, if I recall correctly, even the title of one of your great books, one of my favorites, Total Truth, actually is a moniker that came from something that Francis Schaeffer said. So I want to get into how you transition from being agnostic to being a Christian and the impact that someone like a Francis Schaeffer had, and vicariously the impact that you now can have in this particular epoch of time.
Well, yes, I was raised in a Christian home, but I started questioning my faith in high school. I went to a public high school and was getting secular ideas in all my classes, all my professors, and I started asking, just how do we know Christianity is true? That's it. A lot of people think when teenagers start asking these questions, it's because they're being rebellious. They just want to party on Friday nights. It was none of that. I literally just asked, how do we know that it's true? And I couldn't get any answers. The Christian church I went to, unfortunately my parents, who were also Christians, didn't have any answers. I talked to a Christian university professor. I asked him, why are you a Christian? He said, works for me. I thought, that's all you have to answer? I talked to a Christian seminary dean, and I thought, well, now I'll get some answers. He's a seminary dean. All he said was, don't worry, we all have doubts sometimes. So it was after really struggling with it and asking questions of people that I said, I guess Christianity just doesn't have any answers. And I decided that the only intellectually honest thing to do was to say, if you don't have good reasons for believing something, you shouldn't say you believe it, whether it was Christianity or anything else. So I very consciously rejected my faith about halfway through high school and started looking through the other philosophies and religions of the world that were out there and saying, I guess it's up to me to figure out which one of these is true. And so it was after several years of searching that I was in Europe already, going to school in Germany, and I came across Labrie, the ministry of Francis Schaeffer, which is in Switzerland. And that was the first time I ever heard anyone, any Christian, give reasons and arguments and evidence for Christianity. And also, the first time, by that time I was deeply into philosophy, because I figured if I can't find living people who will give me answers. Maybe these dead guys, maybe these philosophers are the ones who have some answers to questions like, what is truth? And what is the meaning of life? And is there an objective foundation for morality? Or are we all just, you know, what's true for me, what's true for you? So I had already read deeply in philosophy. And here was, this was at Le Brie, was the first time I met Christians who themselves knew enough philosophy to answer my questions. They knew enough about the isms that I was wrestling. I had already totally given into sort of moral relativism, skepticism, determinism, all kinds of isms. It seemed clear to me that if all I had was my puny little mind, obviously I could not attain objective universal truth. The very idea of that was insane. You know, it seemed obvious you had to end up with complete relativism because, you know, my individual human brain is not going to be able to find a truth that is true for all time and all places. So it was at Le Brie that I first encountered people who could answer my questions, and I was very impressed with their answers. And it was, my conversion was primarily intellectual. They answered my questions. They shot down my secular ideas. Okay. So it was later, of course, it became much more personal as well. But it had to start with being persuaded that Christianity is really true and has answers to the questions that life raises for all of us.
Which raises the macro issue that we are always to be ready to give an answer, a reason for the hope that lies within us with gentleness and with respect. But as Christians, it seems to me that oftentimes we're microcosms of the culture rather than being change agents in the cultures. What we do is we do what pagans do. Instead of being salt and light, oftentimes we're baptized secular humanists. You point out in your book that 2/3 of all Christian men watch pornography monthly, and that includes pastors. That the divorce rate among those who identify as Christians is alarmingly high. That over 50% of evangelical millennials approve of homosexual behavior as being a moral kind of behavior. Abortion is rampant among self-identified Christian women. In other words, the point is that we are a reflection of the culture rather than being a reflection of Christ. And that seems to be the macro issue. We're not changing culture, we're reflecting culture.
That's exactly right. And that's why it's so important for Christians to know the secular views. If you don't know the secular views, you will not have a critical grid in place, and you will absorb them. We are so surrounded by secular ideas now. All of our social institutions, education, media, politics, academia, all so secularized today that if you are not intentional and conscious about knowing the secular ideas and knowing the Christian answers, you will end up absorbing the secular ideas. And that's why we have programs like yours, Hank. Apologetics is so important in terms of, you know, my previous books have all been more on the how do we know Christianity is true. And this book, Love Thy Body, now takes it into the area of moral issues, euthanasia and abortion, homosexuality, and so on. Because it's in this area that Christians are now, perhaps more than any other, absorbing secular ideas. And we have to recognize, here's perhaps the best way to get a handle on it. What is the main difference between Christianity and secularism on all of these moral issues? It all comes down to origins. Where did we come from? Secular views of morality all come down to human life is a product of biological evolution. That nature itself is a product of blind material forces, and therefore, there is no meaning or purpose in your body. In other words, your body is not intended to give you some idea of how you should live. It gives you no clues to who you are. You decide what you do with your body. It's just a natural resource like anything else in nature that you can use for your own purposes. You decide what's right or wrong. You decide what sexuality means to you. You decide what life means to you. In other words, when you accept evolution in science, you end up with postmodernism in morality, postmodern relativism, that moral issues are purely a matter of social construction. The construction means I decide what it means to me. So that's why the Christian view always takes into account the facts of science, whether we're talking about abortion, the facts of when life begins, whether we're talking about homosexuality and transgenderism, where we talk about the facts of human reproduction and sexuality. We are always looking at the facts of science because we believe that the universe is a product of a loving God and that the structure of our bodies reflects His loving purpose, and that we start with the scientific facts in order to understand why God gives us the morality He does in the Scripture. If you always look back at how God created us, that gives the reason for the moral teachings in Scripture. Our bodies have a moral meaning. They have a moral message. They're supposed to give us clues to who we are and how we should live. So it's this fundamental difference between, is life the product of blind material forces, or is life the product of a loving God who cares for us and wants us to live in light of how we were actually created? That's the most basic difference between the two.
I'll tell you something. A million lights went off in my mind as you were talking. I want to do a little deep dive on some of the things you just said. First of all, the issue of origins, how one views their origins ultimately will determine how they live their life. If you think you're a function of random chance, you arose from the primordial slime, you can live your life by a different standard than if you're created in the image of God and accountable to Him. So if you talk about apologetic issues, if you talk about the defense of the faith, you are saying, in essence, that this is not a apologetic issue. This seems to be the apologetic issue.
Because everything derives from that. I agree. Let me give you an example. There's a woman who, you'll know her. She's a well-known lesbian pagan, is how she describes herself, Camille Paglia. And in one of her books, she says, how does she defend her lesbianism? She says, on the one hand, homosexuality is not normal. It's contrary to nature. To say that all gender is a social construction is crazy, she says. No, obviously, if you look at nature, whether academic people like it or not, it is clear that in nature we are designed for male-female relationships and that procreation is the key to why are we a sexually reproducing species in the first place? Clearly, we are intended to pair bond as male and female. And then she says, but why should I care what nature intends? She says, it was not God, it was fate that gave us this flesh. And therefore, we have absolute claim to our bodies and may do with them as we see fit. That's her quote. So she acknowledges that nature has designed us to bond as male and female. But she defends her lesbianism by saying, well, nature is devoid of purpose. Nature is just natural forces. So why should I care what nature intends? I'll do what I want. It really crystallizes the difference between the secular view. If nature has no intentions or purposes, then why should we take our cues from nature? We can do with it as we see fit, as Camille Paglia puts it. Whereas if nature is a product of a loving God, then we have a reason to pay attention to what nature has clearly indicated, to the structure of our bodies. That's why back to the title of my book, Love Thy Body. We love our bodies because they're products of God's loving creation. And therefore, we do take our cues from our body in issues like homosexuality, transgenderism, and so on.
We'll pick up Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Professor Nancy Piercy in just a few moments. The Bible Answer Man broadcast and CRI's growing array of outreaches have never been more needed than they are today. And that's why we won't be shy in asking you to stand shoulder to shoulder with the Christian Research Institute through your persistent prayers and generous financial support. Stand with Hank Hanegraaff and CRI in the battle for life and truth and receive a copy of Nancy Piercy's essential new book, Love Thy Body, answering hard questions about life and sexuality as our thanks for your gift. Simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. hankunplugged.org. We'll be back after the break with more of the Hank Unplugged podcast interview with Professor Nancy Piercy on this special edition of the Bible Answer Man.
The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Here's what's in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. You may find yourself approached on the street for a discussion about religious faith. Sounds like Christian street witnessing, right? It could rather be you're facing an atheist and often a GoPro video recorder engaging you in street epistemology. Many complying Christians have miserably failed this very public test displayed on YouTube, but this need not be you. Other topics include Malcolm X and the Christian ethic of violence, the apologetic value of coincidences in New Testament reporting, and much, much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today at a special limited time discount rate by calling 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or subscribe online at equip.org.
Of Nancy Piercy's recent book, Love Thy Body, Answering Hard Questions About Life and Sexuality, Professor Robert P. George of Princeton University says, liberal secularist ideology rests on a mistake, and Nancy Piercy puts her finger right on it. In embracing abortion, euthanasia, homosexual conduct and relationships, transgenderism and the like, liberal secularism is philosophically as well as theologically untenable. Piercy is precisely clear about what makes humans valuable. Don't just read, master Love Thy Body. To receive your hardcover copy as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-transforming outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Take the Bible Answer Man broadcast wherever you go on your phone or handheld device with the Equip app, free from the Christian Research Institute. The Equip app is available for both Apple and Android devices, so you can listen to the Bible Answer Man broadcast live each day or listen to archived programs at your convenience. You can also subscribe to the Christian Research Journal, make a donation to CRI, and read well-researched, trustworthy articles that will help you defend the faith and grow in your walk with Christ. With the Equip app from the Christian Research Institute, you'll have the answers you need to questions about Christianity, cults, and issues of theological and apologetic concern right at your fingertips wherever you go. So go to equip.org/app and download the Equip app for your phone or tablet today. Again, that's equip.org/app. You've tuned in to a special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. Supporters of abortion rights deny the fetus is a person, though she or he is biologically human. Is this equality for women, or does it threaten the intrinsic value of all humans? Be sure to read Nancy Piercy's new book, Love Thy Body, Answering Hard Questions About Life and Sexuality. To receive your hardcover copy of Love Thy Body as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit equip.org. Let's now rejoin Hank's conversation with Professor Nancy Piercy.
You know, Nancy, we live in this world of cognitive dissonance. How do you get people to face the reality that their ideas are actually in conflict? And I'll just give you an example, and part of this comes from your book. You have champions of female rights, champions of women's movements worldwide. Think about someone like Melinda Gates, who seems to buy into the notion of gender fluidity all the time that she's fighting for women's rights, and that seems to underscore this cognitive dissonance. Or you write about Mary Lou Singleton of the Women's Liberation Front, who says, "My entire life work is fighting for the class of people who are oppressed on the basis of their biological sex, including atrocities like forced child marriage, infanticide of baby girls, female genital mutilation. But because of the gender identity movement, it is now deemed transphobic even to label these victims women or girls." So on the one hand, you want to fight for women's rights, and rightfully so. On the other hand, you can't call women women.
Yeah, there is an interesting debate going on between the trans movement and the feminist movement. And you're right, there's In Love Thy Body, I was very grateful to be able to borrow from some feminists who are arguing that, wait a minute, the trans movement is essentially saying that gender is strictly a matter of feelings and that your body means nothing. And a lot of feminists are giving into it, you must realize. But there are feminists who are standing against it and saying, well, wait a minute, if you can't define women by their bodies, then you no longer have a basis for women's rights. We can no longer legally protect women as a class. You are now transphobic if you say breastfeeding, for example. You have to say chest feeding, because that's inclusive of trans men. In other words, women, they're biologically women, but they identify as men. Or activists now say you can no longer refer to pregnant women, because some trans men who are biologically female can get pregnant. Or lactating mothers. In fact, the Midwives Alliance of North America has changed their literature. They've deleted the word mother, and now they say pregnant individuals. And even kids are getting the message. When I was doing my research for Love Thy Body, I found a picture book that was called The Adventures of Tony the Tampon, and it tells young children that men as well as women are capable of menstruating, because now, you know, some trans men are biologically female. So the trans movement has hit the ground running. They took a lot of their techniques from the homosexual rights movement and are applying them much more energetically. The trans movement is far more aggressive than the homosexual movement ever was. And it's creating a climate where people no longer pay any attention to your biological sex. I'm on Twitter, and I follow some of these debates. It's very eye-opening, because you see trans people on Twitter saying things like, you know, my male genitals are female. You know, to have male genitals does not make you a man. I can be female. You know, my flat chest is not male. It's female. My beard is not male, it's female. And they are arguing that even if they have male bodies with all the male characteristics, those characteristics are no longer male. They must be called female. So it is amazing that George Orwell used to say, you know, whoever is in charge of the language is in charge of how a culture goes. So they are very intentionally targeting the language and obliterating the language of biological sex altogether and introducing a completely postmodern climate where you could look at somebody who's completely male in all of their characteristics, and he can look you in the eye and say, no, I'm a female. Again, it's Christianity who is saying we have a higher view of the body than that. We take our identity from our bodies. We take our sense of purpose from our bodies. And it's amazing, because we have centuries we've been told that Christianity is anti-sex and anti-body and has a low view of life in this world, and we've got to counter that and say, no, it's Christianity alone that has a high view of the body today.
And that kind of leads me into something that I wanted you to clarify, one of those sparks that went off in my mind. I mean, you talk about modernism and postmodernism, and a lot of people don't have a handle on what those terms mean. I mean, the sense that modernism has to do with materialism, and that modernism is the ripened fruit of Darwinism, and then the consequence of modernism morphing into postmodernism and now a post-truth culture. Cash that out a little bit for us.
Right. I appreciate that question, because that's going back to the influence of Francis Schaeffer, too. You know, Francis Schaeffer used to say, I think this was his most important message, actually, was that the concept of truth itself has been split in half. That people used to think that there was a natural truth, truth about the natural world, and that there's a moral truth, a truth about the moral world, and that the two are united. They're part of the same system of truth. With the rise of modern science, many people began to say, no, the only truth is what we can know empirically, scientifically. Well, what does that do to anything that you can't know through your senses, through the what you can see, hear, weigh, and measure? Things like moral truths and theological truths. It was simply decided they were not truths after all. They were just personal feelings, personal opinion. Morality is just what makes you feel good. Morality is just what you approve. And so what used to be a unified system of truth was split in half. Only part of it, the empirical side, was considered really true. And the other truths, moral and theological truths, were said to be no longer truths. Those branches were lopped off the tree, so to speak, so that you only had half a tree left. And the image that Schaeffer used to use was two stories in a building, where he said the lower story now is scientific materialist truth, and the upper story has been turned into just private personal opinion, personal experience, your religious views may be personally meaningful to you, but that doesn't mean they're true. They can be true for you and not true for me. And so, essentially, he didn't use these terms, but what he was getting at was what we now call modernism versus postmodernism. Modernism says the only thing that's true is the material world, what we can see, hear, weigh, and measure, what we can know scientifically. Postmodernism says, no, everything's a social construction. You know, you and I both experience things differently. We come up with different ideas based especially on our race, class, gender, right? That's why these three issues have become, three of the main issues that drive the campus wars today is race, class, gender, ethnicity, and so on. So how does that play out in these moral issues? Well, it turns out the same thing is happening with moral issues, that in essence, being human is in the lower story, what Schaeffer called the lower story of the house, where, yes, we can know biologically that the fetus is human from conception. DNA, genetics makes that very clear. But it doesn't achieve moral standing until it becomes a person, with personhood defined in terms of cognitive function, self-awareness, and, well, frankly, defined however the bioethicist wants to. Since there's no empirical measure, every bioethicist out there has a different definition of personhood. And therefore, it's just a social construction. It depends on their personal views and values. And its personhood is a completely postmodern sense. So there's Schaeffer's postmodern word. So there's Schaeffer's upper-lower story applied to abortion. In the lower story, the fetus is human. That's what we can know biologically. But because of evolution, just being human doesn't mean anything, doesn't give you moral standing, doesn't mean you warrant legal protection. No, you have to become a person. But personhood is a completely postmodern concept with no definition, and so people are now starting to argue you can abort a baby up to the moment of birth. There's the two-story view. The human being has been divided into two stories. It's very fragmenting, it's very alienating, it's very dehumanizing, and Christians can come in with a positive message that our goal is to reunite the body and person. We don't see humans as divided that way. You're human from the moment, you're human and a person from the very beginning.
Yeah, so this course raises an issue that you raise in the book. You have abortion advocates saying that if you're against abortion, in essence what you're doing is you're waging a war on women. But what you're pointing out, as I understand you, is you're pointing out that abortion actually wages war on humanity itself. Cash that out for us.
Right. If the sheer fact of being biologically human no longer guarantees the most fundamental right, the right not to be killed, that is a drastic devaluation of human life. And don't think it's going to end with the fetus. Well, it's not ending. Already we can see it's being now applied to issues of euthanasia and assisted suicide. It's just the abortion argument in reverse. says bioethicists defend abortion by saying anyone who has not achieved a prescribed level of cognitive awareness is not a person. And they defend euthanasia by saying if you lose certain cognitive abilities, you are no longer a person, even though you are obviously still human. So at that point, you can be unplugged, your treatment can be withheld, your food and water can be discontinued, your organs can be harvested. So again, being biologically human is not enough to qualify for human rights. You have to earn the right to legal protection by exercising an arbitrary level of neocortical functioning. But this is not compassionate. People argue for assisted suicide on the basis of compassion. That's not compassion. That's exclusive. That's saying some people don't measure up. Some people don't make the cut. They are human, biologically speaking, but we're not going to call them persons and we're not going to protect them. So the pro-life position is actually inclusive. It says if you're a member of the human race, you're in. You have the dignity and status of a full member of the moral community. The moral community is what ethicists mean when they say, who are we morally responsible to take care of? Everyone who's in the human race, according to pro-lifers. So here's an example, a very clear example, where the logic of abortion is now being applied to living human beings who lose a certain level of cognitive functioning. And again, every bioethicist defines personhood differently. So you can have bioethicists defining personhood, you know, somebody who just doesn't feel like they want to live anymore. In Love Thy Body, I have an example of a 70-some-year-old woman who was perfectly healthy, had loving children, had a loving partner, and just said, someday I'm going to be needing a lot of help. Someday I may lose some of my functioning. And she went to Switzerland and committed assisted suicide. So people are defining personhood in terms of sheer, well, I don't feel like I want to go on anymore. It is that elastic of a concept, because postmodern concepts are just social constructions, and therefore, however you construct it for you, that's what works for you.
Well, we've run out of time for today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Be sure to tune in again tomorrow when we'll continue Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Professor Nancy Piercy. In appreciation for your gift to help strengthen and expand the life-changing outreaches of the Christian Research Institute, Hank Hanegraaff would like to send you Professor Piercy's book, Love Thy Body, Answering Hard Questions About Life and Sexuality. Simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit equip.org. You can also write CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina 28271. The Bible Answer Man is funded solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter.
The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Here's what's in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. First, a prominent voice for the Nation of Islam, and then for a violent alternative to Martin Luther King Jr.'s civil rights approach, Malcolm X is arguably one of the most important African-American thinkers. His ethic of violence is more compatible with Christian ethics than many would think, but the two nonetheless diverge at a crucial point. Other topics include the apologetic value of coincidences in New Testament reporting, new atheist evangelism, spirituality in modern hip-hop, and much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today at a special limited-time discount rate by calling 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or subscribe online at equip.org.
Of Nancy Piercy's recent book, Love Thy Body, Answering Hard Questions About Life and Sexuality, Professor Robert P. George of Princeton University says, liberal secularist ideology rests on a mistake, and Nancy Piercy puts her finger right on it. In embracing abortion, euthanasia, homosexual conduct and relationships, transgenderism and the like, liberal secularism is philosophically as well as theologically untenable. Piercy is precisely clear about what makes humans valuable. Don't just read, master Love Thy Body. To receive your hardcover copy as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-transforming outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org.